Chrysalis by Eliadan14. Read by CookieMom6067. Part 1 of the Pumpkin Gnocchi Verse. Chapter 1, Biscotti. Joe is having a very taxing day. In fairness, no one expects to begin the day by coming face to face with one's lover's estranged family, standing on the doorstep when one had been expecting the postman, or perhaps the drunk Frenchman from next door. In even more fairness, it's 9 in the morning and even Booker doesn't start that early. "We are looking for Niccolo," a middle-aged woman tells him imperiously, in fluent Italian, with a clear expectation he will understand and answer in the same language, even though they're in Hamburg. Nicky's in the shower, which leaves Joe to invite their guests in and make them comfortable until Nicky comes downstairs. Blessedly, Nicky retains a high level of Italian coffee snobbery from his youth, which means that Joe is capable of offering the women, who might be Nicky's mother and sister, a cappuccino, since it is before lunchtime and therefore still permissible to have milk in one's coffee. "Do you take sugar?" he asks, knowing it is a fool's errand even as he speaks. The older woman sniffs imperiously. The younger asks for biscotti. Joe has to root through the cabinet for a full 5 minutes to find the tin of biscotti Nicky had made a week ago and then declared a failure. Joe had thought they were delicious, but then Nicky has yet to cook him something he doesn't find delicious. Nicky said they were terrible, he says apologetically as he offers the younger woman the tin. "I thought they were quite nice." She takes a bite. "Not enough snap," she says, exactly as Nicky had. "Is that cardamom?" "Yes," Joe says. "We try to combine our heritages in our food." "We," he says, as if any of their more adventurous culinary pursuits are his idea. "It's a nice flavor," she allows. Nicky comes down the stairs then, rubbing his hair dry on a towel that he will presumably hang over the balustrade and then forget about until it annoys Joe enough to point out in 3 or 4 days. He freezes on the bottom step when he sees who is sitting in the living room eating biscotti. No one says anything for quite a long time. "Why would you offer them that biscotti?" Nicky asks eventually in his heavily accented German. "It's terrible." "Well," Joe says reasonably, in the same language, "we don't have any other biscotti lying around." "Hmm," Nicky says, a noise which indicates he would rather Joe have not served any biscotti at all. Thus it goes with foods that Nicky deems failed. They are tried once, and then either Joe eats up the leftovers before Nicky can throw them out, or they are gone. "How long have you lived here?" the woman Joe is almost positive as Nicky's mother asks suddenly, still in Italian. When it becomes clear that Nicky is not answering the question, Joe says, "We've been in Hamburg for about 3 years now. Before that, we lived in London." "You lived in London together then, too?" Joe looks over at Nicky helplessly, but Nicky appears to be still frozen solid. "For about 4 years," he says. "Hmm," the woman who must be Nicky's mother says, sounding so exactly like her son when he disapproves of something that Joe's heart aches. They're all silent for a very long, excruciating moment. Perhaps Nicky's sister takes another bite of biscotti, but it doesn't crunch. It really does lack the snap. "And I suppose you claim to love my son," Nicky's mother asks Joe at last. Nicky takes a sharp breath, and that is what makes Joe react more than his mother's words. "Do I claim to love him?" Joe asks. "No more than the sun claims to rise in the east. No more than the earth claims to revolve around the sun. In fact, I claim that I love him as immutably as either of those facts, and that I love him as constantly, Every morning the sun rises, and every morning I love Nikki. Every moment the earth travels around the sun, and every moment I love Nikki. Joe, Nikki says, chiding. The smile playing at the corner of his lips belies his tone. Must you? I must, Joe says, flashing his most charming smile at Nikki. You know I must. Won't you introduce me to our guests, my heart? Nikki gives him the most long-suffering look Joe has seen on his face since the last time Booker talked them into watching the Darts World Championship. He takes the hand Joe offers nonetheless, allows himself to be led into the living room. Joe, he says, this is my mother, Lucia, and my sister, Elena. Mama, Elena, this is Yusuf Alkazani, my husband. Elena's eyebrows shoot up. Lucia's mouth twitches, but otherwise her face does not change. You ask this man to marry you? She asks instead. And Joe wonders if he should feel insulted. He asked me, Nikki says. Many times, Joe adds. Why, Elena asks, having drained her cappuccino, would anyone ask Nicola to marry them more than once? What can I say? Joe asks, spreading his arms wide. I took one bite of his pumpkin gnocchi, and I was a man in love. Nikki first met Joe at Andy's flat. He had been leaving and Joe had been coming, but he had found Joe arresting enough to get caught in the doorway for long minutes until Wynne had to remind him that he would miss the last train out to his tiny one-bedroom apartment, barely still within London. I'm sorry to see you go, Joe had said, so earnestly that Nikki had thought of the interaction fondly for days afterward. They met for the second time in a terrible nightclub Andy and Wynne had dragged them both to celebrate something or other. Wynne's master's degree, or Andy's birthday, or both, or neither. It wasn't as if those two needed much of a reason to celebrate. Nikki was reasonably certain he had only been brought along because Wynne felt sorry for him. They were both research assistants for the same professor, and over the course of a long night of grading papers, he had found himself spilling his whole story to her. How he had grown up in rural Italy, surrounded by devout Catholics, at least when it came to judging the actions of others. Before heading for seminary school at age 18, when he could no longer pretend he would ever fall in love with a woman. Leaving the church at 22 in disgust at the never-ending reports of pedophilia. Living in his parents' house again for a month before realizing he would never be able to be himself, until he left it all behind, running away to London, leaving a letter behind to explain himself. He must have sounded lonely. How standing awkwardly against the wall in a club blasting the music of someone who referred to himself as Mr. Worldwide, watching Wynne and Andy dance, was supposed to help, was anyone's guess. Want to get out of here? Joe yelled in his ear. Nikki turned to him, shocked. It is very loud, and I don't think they'll be needing us anytime soon. Joe gestured toward the dance floor, where Wynne and Andy were doing something to each other that Nikki would have been ashamed to do in his own bed. All right, Nikki said. Outside the club, Joe heaved a sigh of relief. I love them. But going dancing with them is awful, he said. Is going dancing without them better? Nikki asked skeptically. Short of drinking more alcohol than he was comfortable with, he couldn't see himself able to enjoy that kind of situation. Joe laughed, and Nikki felt a deep thrill in the pit of his belly. You don't know he's gay, Nikki reminded himself. And even if Joe was, he could do so much better than an inexperienced ex-priest. The man was gorgeous. I think we could have fun, Joe told him, and grabbed Nikki's hand to spin him around in a mockery of a ballroom dance. Nikki was glad it was too dark for his flush to be noticeable. I could murder a falafel wrap, Joe said. You hungry? Starving. Nikki agreed. What's falafel? What's falafel? Joe repeated, shocked. Nikki, I have so much to teach you. You've had a kebab, right? Nikki ended the night, having eaten what felt like half a cow stuffed into flatbread and drowned in sauce, as well as a good portion of Joe's falafel wrap. I can't believe you've never tried that before, Joe laughed as they waited for the first early train from King's Cross, miraculously in the same direction. I grew up in Italy, Nikki said in his own defense. We're very proud of our own cuisine. Alas, Joe said, affecting great sadness. Not only do I keep halal, I also don't eat meat. Italian cuisine is not kind to me.
That's not true.
No? It must have been Joe's smile, or Nikki's exhaustion. But the next thing he said was, I'll prove it to you. Come over tomorrow. I'll cook you the best vegetarian Italian food I know. That was how it started. To be continued. Chrysalis Chapter 2 Bruschetta.
Nicola made gnocchi, Elena repeats, and she looks much like Nikki did when Andy had tried to convince him skinny jeans were a good idea. They were the best idea Andy has ever had, and Joe wants to fall to his knees in worship every time Nikki wears the damn things, but that's beside the point. Joe opens his mouth to protest that Nikki makes the best gnocchi in the world, but he's stopped momentarily by the arresting pink flush on Nikki's cheeks. His husband is a stoic man, but his blushes have always been his worst tell. Joe raises an eyebrow at him. Later, Nikki says, pleads, really, and Joe subsides. What brings you two to Hamburg? Nikki's mother looks away, out the window, steely-eyed. In the second before Elena speaks, Joe knows what she will say. The muted blacks and grays of their clothing and the black hat still firmly fastened to Lucia's head coming together in his mind when he had barely registered them before. Papa died 3 days ago, Elena says. In the silence following her announcement, Joe has to stop himself from rubbing his hands up and down the sides of his jeans, has to curb the impulse to rest a hand on Nikki's shoulder, has to forcibly keep himself from reaching out. It's not what Nikki would need. It is only what Joe wants. Eventually, Nikki sits heavily on the sofa. Ah, he says. When is the funeral? Sunday, Lucia says. Will you be coming? Do you want me to? She purses her lips. Would I be here if I didn't? I don't know, Nikki says. And Joe has to leave. Has to go to the kitchen and put the kettle on. Tears building behind his eyes at the reminder that his beautiful, wonderful husband has gone so long without any acknowledgement from his family. He takes deep breaths as he sorts out the tea tray. Morning is not for coffee. Morning is for hot tea, strong and sweet. And if he can't touch Nikki in front of these people, can't rub even harder in their faces than he already has, how loved Nikki is, he will do what he can to show it as Nikki would, with food and drink. He sets the tea tray down on the coffee table, presses Nikki's favorite tea mug in his hand, the squat one, with the rounded belly and the lovingly hand-drawn kittens chasing each other around the bottom. Tea as sweet as he knows Nikki secretly likes but doesn't drink too often because it's not healthy. Nikki doesn't say anything, but his jaw unclenches. It is enough. Nikki woke up panicking. He didn't know what possessed him to invite a beautiful man to his tiny, cramped apartment for a home-cooked Italian meal. Probably the infernal vodka-Red Bull combination Andy had handed him at the club. Okay, he told himself, breathing deeply. You handled years of seminary school. You can handle this. He sat up in bed, grabbed his laptop from the table, and started Googling what foods exactly were halal. Really, there were only two issues. Meat was the first, but there were plenty of foods without pork or its byproducts, and Nikki had no intention of ever cooking goat or lizard in the first place, even if Joe did eat meat. No, the true problem was something Nikki had not foreseen. There was no shortage of vegetarian Italian foods. Nikki grew up on them. Rich mushroom risottos, pizzas with a crisp base, and a thin spread of tomato sauce, topped with fresh mozzarella di bufala. But with every recipe he Googled, he came up against the issue of alcohol. Joe said he kept halal after all, and Nikki hadn't seen him take a drink of anything but sparkling water last night. And how to make a good tomato sauce with no red wine, Nikki didn't know. Nikki didn't even really know how to make tomato sauce, but he did know that when he saw his mother make it, there was always an open bottle of red wine next to the stove. He found a halal recipe for risotto and realized after reading three steps of it that he had never cooked rice that couldn't be microwaved. Fuck, he said, falling back against his bed. This was a monumentally stupid idea. He'd had a vague imagination when he left Liguria that he could shed the weight of religion and expectation and begin a new life. That he could put paid to the years of fantasies in which he could hold a hand as strong and large as his own, in which he could be held and comforted against a broad chest, in which he could kiss someone the way he longed to kiss, deep and intense, in the light of day instead of hidden behind the shadows of a church pew. He longed to feel like there was nothing wrong with the way he loved. But after 4 lonely months in England, he had begun to understand that he carried the feeling of wrongness within him, and all the distance in the world wouldn't set him free until he had conquered it. It was a foolhardy move to ask Joe out. Perhaps he would be able to disguise it as a friendly overture. Nikki groaned against his pillow. He was pretty sure he'd fail at that, too. Making friends was hard now, harder than it ever was as a child, when all his friends had gone to the same school, and he'd seen them every day. He was pretty sure he wouldn't make it through a whole dinner with Joe without saying something very obvious about how handsome he found Joe, or how sweet his low laugh sounded. That was, of course, presuming he would manage to prepare dinner. His phone chimed as if on cue, and he scrambled for it in the sheets. Hey, it's Joe. Are we still on for tonight? It would have been Nikki's chance to back out, to call it off, to at least invite Joe out for a meal instead of going through with this truly ridiculous plan, but definitely. Is 7 okay? He did none of those things. Instead, he pulled together his most cogent memory of the kitchen at home, when he'd gotten conned into eating the gnocchi because of his asbestos fingers when Elena had been too squeamish to touch the hot potato flour mixture. The internet suggested adding pumpkin to the gnocchi, and Nikki figured he might as well try as hard as he could to impress Joe if this was his only chance. He dragged himself to the Tesco's around the corner, still feeling the lack of sleep and the two drinks a lot more than he should. He felt older than 23, and sheltered, and altogether entirely unsuited to wooing a man like Joe. He was a student, he had told Nikki yesterday, an art student, and he hoped to one day be a teacher. He had scrubbed a hand through his messy curls as he said it, sheepish, and Nikki had told him far too seriously that it was a beautiful ambition. God above, even remembering it made Nikki feel like an idiot. He bought tomatoes and garlic on impulse, deciding no Italian meal could be complete without them. And by the time he'd made a lap around the store, he had decided to add a baguette. Meals had courses, right? He made the bruschetta first, chopping tomatoes and garlic, and only once his own thumb. He added in herbs, dried because he was in England and he didn't know which would disappoint his mother more. Dried herbs, the sad excuse for fresh thyme on sale in the store, or the fact that what had finally convinced her only son to take up cooking was a handsome man. Oil and salt, and covered the bowl before turning to the much more difficult part of his day. It was already 3, so he figured it was as good a time as any to boil the potatoes and roast the pumpkin. He remembered how upsettingly hot the dough had been when he'd stumbled into the kitchen, fresh from kissing Alessandra Lombardi in the vestry, confused and aroused and desperately unhappy, and smelling like the mothballs trapped between the choir boy robes they had been tasked with hanging up. He had barely noticed how the dough had burned his hands until his mother had taken it away. After he'd been pounding at it for so long, his palms were bright red. Nicky'd never actually made pumpkin before, but the recipe had said to slice it into wedges. He was momentarily stymied by the mess of seeds and strings he discovered within, but a quick Google search told him how best to deal with that. He really was deeply pathetic. He chopped basil and garlic while the potatoes boiled, mindful of the Band-Aid wrapped around his thumb. He didn't have a food processor, so the next part would be more than a bit experimental. He waited until the potatoes were done to start on the pine nuts. The internet claimed potatoes were done when they slid off a knife. This seemed to Nicky to be a dubious claim, because surely gravity decided that. But he had gotten this far on the tips from food blogs, so he kept going. Roasting the pine nuts in a pan was one of the more stressful experiences of his life. They weren't terribly burned when he took them off the heat, so he would have to count it as a success. He laid them out on a cutting board and put a layer of plastic wrap on top before fetching his hammer from underneath the shoe shelf by the door and pounding them to dust. Muttering a silent apology to his neighbors, he added the pine nuts to the chopped basil and crushed garlic, carefully measuring out the oil and lemon juice before adding in salt and pepper. Then he fell asleep on the couch for 2 hours. Cooking was much more difficult and taxing than he had imagined. He woke up at 6, still in his sweatpants and sweated through t-shirt, and swore heavily. One more thing in his life that had become permissible since he left the church. After a quick shower, he had put on the least objectionable clothes he owned, jeans and a clean t-shirt, before returning to his tiny kitchen, which was a disaster area. The pesto had congealed to some sort of sludge, swimming in oil, and Nicky was terrified for a moment that he'd have to start all over, but it turned out he just needed to stir it for a few moments until it was the right consistency again. The bruschetta smelled deliciously of garlic and herbs, but the tomatoes and oil had created an unappetizing soup in the bottom of the bowl. Nicky drained it over the sink and realized with a sinking feeling that he was serving a half bulb of garlic on a first date. He sighed at himself. It was too late to change it now. He went back to the worst part of the project then, the gnocchi. He peeled the pumpkin flesh out of the skin and dumped it in the biggest bowl he owned, followed by the potatoes, what he guesstimated to be the right amount of flour, and 2 eggs to bind the whole mess together. He'd already almost finished kneading it all by the time he realized he'd forgotten salt. He covered the cardboard salt container in sticky trails of dough as he poured in something approximating a teaspoon, too close to running out of time to care. Rolling out a dough this sticky felt wrong. Nicky had to Google it 3 times to be sure he was doing the right thing, and even then, he wasn't sure. It was 6:30, though. He got the fuckers cut, even rolled them up on a fork so they'd have the raised bumps in the middle they were supposed to, and dropped them into boiling water. It was slow going, draining each group of gnocchi to be finished through a slotted spoon before depositing them in a soup plate. They were such a bright orange. His family would have hated them. so clearly not the original recipe. The thought filled Nicky with something a lot like pride. Perhaps this was how he could find peace with home. Perhaps tomorrow he would try the risotto. Perhaps, he considered, Joe would want to try it with him. With the gnocchi finished for now, he sliced the baguette with only minutes to spare and set it in the oven. The buzzer sounded just as he closed the oven door. His t-shirt was covered in streaks of flour. Nicky sighed and dusted himself off as best he could. "Niccolo," Joe said as Nicky opened the door. He was leaning against the doorframe, wearing dark jeans and a leather jacket, except that Nicky knew it must be fake leather, because a man as principled as Joe would care about that. And Nicky wanted to bury his hands in Joe's hair and kiss him until he couldn't breathe. "Joe," he said instead, "I'm glad you're here." He held the door open, and Joe, instead of coming in, wrapped Nicky into a hug. "Thank you for inviting me," Joe told him. "It smells wonderful." Nicky laughed as they pulled apart. "That would be all the garlic." "A man after my own heart," Joe said, towing off his shoes and stepping into Nicky's flat. Nicky was helpless to do anything but follow. To be continued. Chrysalis, Chapter 3. Gnocchi. It's Elena who asks him. Joe suspects Lucia has too much pride. "You will come home with us for the funeral, no?" Nicky swallows thickly, his mouth tightening as he folds his one singular black suit and puts it in his suitcase. Joe had hoped to get him alone, to have a moment just to hold his husband and tell him how sorry he is that this is how he has to say goodbye to his father. It's impossible, with Elena shadowing the doorway to their bedroom. Joe shrugs helplessly, eyes trained on Nicky. "I will do whatever you think is best." "I want you with me," Nicky says plainly. He hasn't spoken much, and Joe can tell why. His voice is raw. "But I don't want to fight Mama over it." "Ach!" Joe scoffs, the guttural German sounding better than any of the many curse words on his tongue. "You might as well bring him," Lucia says imperiously from the doorway. "No privacy these people will grant them. No privacy at all. The whole town has been wondering if he would come." "And how?" Nicky asks, his jaw clenched so tight Joe can almost hear his teeth creak. "Does the whole town know about Joe?" "You remember Matteo Pugliese?" Elena asks. Nicky nods tightly. "He came to Hamburg on a class trip last year. He saw you two having dinner by the river and put a picture on his Instagram account." "He's not old enough to be on Instagram," Nicky counters, turning away. Joe wants to laugh. Nicky finds that no one under the age of 25 should be on social media, and even then, they should have considered very carefully if they want to run for political office. "Matteo is 16, Elena says. "He has Instagram and no one can do anything about it." 16, Nicky repeats. His tone reveals nothing, but Joe knows he is surprised. "You've been gone a long time," Lucia says, and descends the staircase imperiously. Nicky closes his eyes for a count of five, and when he opens them again, Joe knows he is not ready to talk about anything. "I'll pack your suit," he says. "Lucky it's fall break and you don't have to go to school. Maybe Sebastian will feed the monster." "Right," Joe says. "I'll go ask." Booker is slow to answer the door, and Joe is already dreading having to talk to him, hungover and bad-tempered. When he finally does appear, he seems less awful than normal, which Joe is glad for. Good neighbors are hard to find in big cities, and with just the two maisonettes in their little house, they've been worried recently they would lose Booker to his drinking eventually. "Morning," Booker says. "Morning," Joe says. "Listen, I'm here to ask you a favor." Nikki and I have to go to Italy for a few days. Could you feed Aramis? All right, Booker yawns. His shirt is unbuttoned. Should start calling him Porthos by now, though. Everything all right? Joe shakes his head, swallowing around the lump in his throat. Nikki's father. He trails off. Ah, Booker says. My condolences. Sebastian! A voice Joe does not recognize calls from within Booker's apartment, and Joe raises his eyebrows. Booker flushes deeply red. I should get back. I still have your key from last time. Joe nods and heads back to his own apartment, albeit unwillingly. He finds Aramis hiding under the bed, scared off by the unknown guests. Ah, dear one, he murmurs into Aramis's dark fur. You have the right idea. He lets Aramis rub his face on his fingers before stroking over his head a few times and kissing the cat's flank. We'll be back. Be nice to Booker. He groans, righting himself, and throws a few pairs of boxers and socks into the suitcase as well as a button-up shirt or two. He's just closing the suitcase when Nikki comes back into the room. I got us on the same flight as Mama and Elena, Nikki says. That's good, Joe says, although he's not entirely sure it is. Booker will feed the monster. All right. With nothing left to say, they gather their things and leave the house. Joe seemed to enjoy the bruschetta. He ate four slices of toasted baguette slathered in tomato and garlic, at any rate, humming in the back of his throat and chasing the bits of tomato that fell to his plate with a fork. They ate at the patio table Nikki used as a dining room table, because his apartment was too small for anything else, and it had only cost £10 at IKEA, and Nikki would have been ashamed, would have found everything terrible and awkward, if only Joe was not so at ease. That was delicious, Joe said, licking his lips. I believe you've already proved your point. Nikki had felt his ears flush. I have a whole main course to fuck it up, he pointed out. Joe threw his head back and laughed, and the line of his throat made Nikki remember all over again why it had been worth spending his entire Saturday learning how to cook. He fried the gnocchi in oil, and then added pesto into the pan at the very end, and tried to ignore how Joe watched his every move, how closely Joe stood behind him in the kitchen. Ignore the kitchen, please, he said. I'm a messy cook. Believe me, Joe told him. I'm not looking at your counters. A pleasant shiver wound its way down Nikki's spine. Joe moaned around his first bite of gnocchi, his eyes sliding shut as he tasted them. Nikki, who had spent the better part of his day working on making them, and had consequently not eaten anything at all since his kebab last night, nearly forgot about food entirely. Marry me, Joe said when he finished his first bite. Are you talking to me or the gnocchi? Nikki asked. Joe sighed happily around another bite before answering. While the gnocchi are delicious, it would be a very short marriage because I would eat them all. If I married you, I could have gnocchi whenever I wanted. Nikki grinned around his fork. You'd have to persuade me into making them first, he pointed out. You are very relaxed, Joe said. Were you expecting me otherwise? Joe shrugged. When we met, Quinn told me to keep my hands off you. She made it sound like you were a wild animal who would run from human touch. Santa Maria, Nikki muttered disparagingly to himself. I knew I shouldn't have told her about my past. Got a lot of skeletons in your closet? Not yet, I don't, Nikki said. But if Wynn doesn't watch out, that may change. Joe's eyes crinkled beautifully in the corners when he was pleased. What about you? Nikki asked, deflecting. How did you end up in London? Joe was a natural storyteller, spinning the quest to find a university in an interesting city far enough away from home to be an adventure into an epic. He told it around bites of gnocchi, heaping praise on Nikki's skill as a cook in between narrations of his and Andy's years as undergraduates. By the end of the meal, Nicky was more sure than he had ever been that he had made the right choice. First in coming here, second in asking Joe out, third in cooking for him. "I don't have dessert," he admitted, "but I could make you an espresso." Joe stretched, leaning back on his rickety chair with his arms folded behind his head, the entire breadth of his chest on dizzying display. "I had something else in mind," Joe admitted.
"Oh?"
Nicky asked. Joe said. "I thought I might be able to talk you into kissing me." The idea, the very notion, that Joe should have to put any sort of effort into making Nicky want to kiss him was ludicrous. Nicky was on his feet before he could overthink it, rounding the table and pulling Joe to stand as well. He slid his arms around Joe's waist, angled his head, leaned in, slid their mouths together. Joe's lips tasted of salt and garlic. They were as soft and plush as Nicky had imagined. Joe's body was firm against Nicky's, his crisp shirt crinkling as he moved to cup Nicky's jaw to deepen their kiss. Sensation sparked across Nicky's brain, heating his skin and clogging his mind. He had been able to think once before he kissed Joe. Now, having kissed Joe, he wasn't sure he would be able to ever again. Why he should want to do anything besides kiss Joe again and again was a mystery that needed no solving. Sadly, Joe pulled away too soon, nipping at Nicky's lips when he chased Joe's mouth. "Let me catch my breath," Joe laughed. "Breathing is overrated," Nicky said, eyes trained on Joe's pink, swollen mouth, brain still not functioning. Joe let himself be drawn in again, let Nicky kiss him and kiss him and kiss him, until Nicky's heart was pounding and his hair was a mess from Joe's hands running through it. "Joe," he breathed when they pulled apart again. "Tesoro." Joe, eyes bright and molten, crinkling in the corners as he smiled, traced the line of Nicky's jaw with his thumb. "I like that," Joe said. Nicky didn't know if he meant the kissing or the pet name, but either way, "good," he said. "Let me take you out," Joe said.
"Huh?"
Joe's arms looped around Nicky's neck, pulled him close, rested their foreheads together. "Let me take you out. Show you what a good time dancing can be if it's with me. Let me do this right?" Nicky's eyes slid shut. It was everything he had wished for, hoped for, hands deep in too hot dough at 16, tears clouding his eyes when he left home for the last time at 22. "All right," he said. And if it sounded rough, well, he had just been kissed within an inch of his life. To be continued.
Chrysalis, Chapter 4, Mint Tea. Joe shoots Quinn a text before they get on the plane, and then spends 2 hours alternating between worriedly watching Nicky stare out the window and trying to grade exams. "You're a teacher?" Elena asks him, somewhere over Switzerland. "Yes," Joe answers, not looking up from Hussein's French exam. If he can get through exercise 2 on all the exams before they land, he'll only have 2 more exercises left. "And what do you teach?" "Art, mostly." Elena looks pointedly at the exam he's grading. "Germans will let you teach anything if you're good enough at it, and they can't find anyone else to do it," Joe allows. "I teach a few language courses as well." Nicky snorts, the first sound he's made since they got on the plane. "He's being modest," Nicky says, still towards the window. "Yusuf speaks better Italian than me most days, and his Arabic and French are wasted on the German school system." Elena leaves then because the fasten seatbelt sign has been turned on. Joe reaches out, rests a hand on Nicky's shoulder. Nicky says nothing, but he doesn't shrug Joe's hand off. In Rome, they take a taxi from the airport to the train station, and then they stand by the platform for an hour, waiting on the next train towards Genova. Joe's phone rings a half hour in, and he takes the call, stepping away from the awkward silence with unguarded relief. I've been trying to reach you for hours, Quinn all but shouts down the line. Shh, Quinn, not so loud, Joe hisses. We were on a plane. Tell me you didn't go to Italy to see his family. All right, I won't tell you. You asshole, Alcazani, I told you when you met him. You told me shit, Joe snaps. Nikki's father died, Quinn, and just because you scorched the earth you walked over doesn't mean he does. She's silent on the other end for a long while. Sorry, he says. Sorry. This is just... He needs his friends now. I'm sorry, Quinn says. He's never heard her say that before. You're right. You know him better in this. What do I do? Joe huffs a laugh. I don't know. You tell him you're sorry for his loss, that you're there if he needs someone to talk to, that you understand how hard it is to have a family who doesn't accept you like no one else. Quinn sniffles just once on the other end. Ugh, she says, her voice waterlogged on the other end. Will you give me a hug when I see you next? Of course, he says, surprised. Don't I always? A proper Joe hug, she insists. Definitely. All right, she sighs. Pass me to Nikki. He walks back down the track, hands the phone to Nikki. Nikki takes it and walks off in the direction Joe just came from, and Joe hopes she can do more for Nikki right now than he can. Nikki's red-eyed when they get on the train at last. He presses the length of their legs together under the tiny table between them and Lucia and Elena. After three stops, Nikki asks, "Was he sick for long?" Lucia looks up from the book she's been staring at since the Hamburg airport without ever turning the pages. Not long, she says. A few months. Nikki swallows tightly. I'm sorry I didn't know, he says eventually, as if it's his fault. Joe knows in Nikki's mind it is his own fault that he left, that he was not there. He tries not to take it personally. 10 minutes into their second date, Nikki blurted out, I was going to be a priest. What? Joe asked, bemused. He was sipping a glass of fresh mint tea, leaned back comfortably against the chair in the bar they were in. It had been a little less than a week since their first date, and Nikki had spent the intervening days texting Joe, thinking about Joe, and telling Quinn to shut up and leave him alone about Joe. Nikki began, blushing. I just meant, this is all very new to me. Because you were going to be a priest. Yes. Joe blinked slowly, his eyes crinkling in the corners in the way that Nikki had already begun to crave, and then he burst into laughter. Is this the dark backstory Quinn warned me of? He teased. Nikki narrowly avoided running a hand through his hair, which he'd spent a shamefully long time trying to arrange before meeting Joe here. I suppose, he said. It's not really that much of a big deal. Joe raises an eyebrow. My family was very religious, Nikki explained. I was, too. The church seemed like a better option than letting everyone down. For a long moment, Joe studied him. Nikki used the moment to imagine every awful thing Joe might be thinking of him right then. Was? Joe asked eventually. Excuse me? Nikki asked. You said I was religious. Are you not anymore? Oh. Of all the things, Nikki hadn't expected Joe to latch onto that detail. To be honest, he'd been expecting something more in the vein of a question about his vow of celibacy. I don't really know, he said at last. I couldn't stomach the church at any rate. It seemed like every day there was some new scandal, some new horror being hushed up and pushed aside. Joe hummed in agreement. I have a hard time believing God could still love me as I am. Nikki couldn't look at Joe as he said it, fingers tracing lines in the wooden table. What an awful conversation for a second date. Joe reached out and clasped Nikki's hand in his.
I know what that feels like, he said. Nikki chanced a smile at Joe. I don't think God could make any human by mistake, Joe said. Not a God I want to believe in anyway. It was a nice sentiment, and one Nikki wanted desperately to share. I hope I'll believe that too someday, he said. Stop me if I'm asking too much, Joe said. But your family? Nikki shrugged. They know I'm in London. They know why I'm in London. They haven't tried to get in touch. I'm sorry. Nikki sighed. It is what it is. He allowed his thumb to trace across Joe's knuckles. I didn't mean for things to get so serious. I only wanted to tell you why I'm out of practice at this. Because you were almost a priest. It won't stop being true if you keep saying it, Nikki said, peeved. Joe's laugh was as dark and rich as his eyes. Just trying to picture you in a dog collar, that's all. I don't take confession until the third date, Nikki teased. He was rewarded with another laugh from Joe. And here I thought you'd be so innocent and sheltered. Nikki allowed his smile to turn sharp. I may be sheltered, but you wouldn't believe the shit people say in confession. He had been unsure if his memory had embellished their first date, made the flickering bulb in Nikki's lamp romantic instead of irritating, made Joe out to be more handsome than he was. Now, here, in the low lighting of a bar, Joe knows well enough to greet the server by name, having listened to Joe laughing at his awful sense of humor. Nikki was sure Joe was the handsomest man he had ever met. So what you're saying? Joe asked when he recovered from his laughter, fingers still toying with Nikki's. Is that I ought to go easy on you, because you're not used to being out. No, Nikki said, frowning. I wouldn't ask you to hide yourself. I mean that you should go easy on me if I dance like an idiot and my knees go weak every time you touch me, because I spent the last 4 years in seminary school. I could do that, Joe said. He then proceeded to do anything but. He brought Nikki to a club with music that didn't make Nikki want to claw his ears off, and despite both of them being completely sober, Nikki felt drunk within moments of Joe leading him onto the dance floor. It was crowded enough so that he didn't feel watched, and the air was humid with the bodies surrounding them. Joe's hands were steady on his hips, leading him in a steady swaying motion from foot to foot, helping him to catch the beat of the music. By the time Nikki had managed to get the hang of the basic movement of the thing, Joe had insinuated himself entirely in Nikki's personal space. You're doing just fine, Joe said against his ear. Nikki shuddered. He let Joe drag him closer still by the hips until they were sharing the same air. With the bass pounding in his veins, he found he had the courage to grip at Joe's hair just like he'd wanted to last week, dragging him in for a kiss. He woke up the next morning with his legs sore from dancing, his voice shot from talking over the loud music in the club, his lips puffy from kissing, from dragging along the stubble lining Joe's jaw. Today he would brave a lasagna, he thought, the food that could most surely convince Joe to stay with him and not leave him to wake up alone again. To be continued. Chrysalis, Chapter 5, Lasagna. Joe's not sure what he imagined the house Nikki grew up in to be like. A villa by the sea full of marble statues meant to look at and not touch? A cottage in the middle of the mountains where they slept four to a room? Some other Italian cliché? The truth was, he hadn't thought much about it. Their lives together had been forward-focused, neither of them interested in looking back at what had been, when what had been had hurt. Nikki grew up in a normal-sized house for a family, at least in the 1990s. Joe can only dream of being able to afford a freestanding multi-story house in Hamburg. The outside is a deep, lovely terracotta, but otherwise it looks like any other house. There is a door, there are windows, and roof. There are herbs in the windowsill, rosemary, thyme, and basil.
just like at home. Joe has been sure of Nikki for a very, very long time, and he can't imagine anything would change that. But until today, he also hadn't been able to imagine that Nikki had brought anything at all of his old life into their home. He'd thought, maybe foolishly, that Nikki's reticence to speak of this, of here, meant that he had left it behind him. To find that Nikki has brought something of it with him, to find that he'd planted the seeds of his heritage in the garden of their home, Joe wishes he had known so he could have honored it. "We don't have to stay here," he says, low in Nikki's ear, when Nikki lingers by the gate, hesitant to follow Elena up the steps to the front door. "We could get a hotel." Nikki looks over at him for what feels like the first time in hours. "There are no hotels here, Yusuf," he says. Of course Joe knows they're in the middle of nowhere. He just spent almost 10 hours getting here. "Still, there must be something open," he insists. "I can check Airbnb." "It's only 2 nights," Nikki says. "It's a waste of money." "Not if it makes you feel better," Joe says, and doesn't ask, "What if you want to stay longer?" "Let's just get through this," Nikki says, visibly steeling himself as he steps through the doorway. Joe follows because he always will. When they enter the house, they find Elena crouched on the floor with her arms around a child under the age of 5. "Porco Dio, she had a child with that idiot," Nikki mutters to himself, quietly enough, and German enough, that Elena probably only catches the swearing. "Niccolo, this is your uncle, Niccolo," she says to the child, and Nikki freezes dead in his tracks. The child, Niccolo, little Niccolo, Niccolo Jr., Nikki the second, Niccolino, waves with his pudgy little hand, and Joe, who sees more than enough of children at work, thinks he might have a heart attack when Nikki waves back. "Buongiorno," Nikki says to his nephew. He switches fully to Italian and asks the boy how he is. When this produces a swell of grammatically incoherent responses in the same language, Nikki proceeds up the hallway toward his family, follows them into a living room clearly furnished several decades ago, and sits down on a footstool, apparently unaware of anything except the in-depth story Niccolino is telling him about his friend Barbara and his toy truck. Joe is left lingering awkwardly in the doorway, watching the scene before him. "Come and help me," Lucia says imperiously from behind him. "And close your mouth, you'll catch flies." Joe closes his mouth and follows her to the kitchen. "You haven't had children yet," she observes, handing him a carton of eggs and a stick of butter from the fridge. "No," Joe says slowly. "Why?" "Well, it's not biologically possible." She makes a disgruntled sound. "They have ways around that. Anyway, there's always adoption." They've talked about adoption in point of fact, more than once. It's a thought both of them like, opening their home for children who might need it. Joe had always thought it would be something that would happen when they were older, more adult, able to afford a third bedroom. He supposes, at 33, he's about as adult as he's going to get. "I'm sorry, signora," he says, as respectful in tone as he can manage, given that the words are so rude. "But I wasn't aware you cared what Nikki and I do." "Hmm," she says. Joe puts the eggs and butter on the counter when she doesn't turn around to face him again. "You're tall," she says. "Hand me the cinnamon and the walnuts from the shelf up there." He does. He watches her boil a single potato on the stove while she pours milk into a plastic cup measure and sets it in the microwave for a minute, then stirs in yeast and sugar. He hands her the flour when she asks for it and observes as she measures out 5.5 cups. "You said that Niccolo cooked for you," she says eventually, staring at the yeast as if this conversation will make it bubble faster. "Nikki cooks all the time," Joe says. "He's very good at it." "Hmm," she says. She takes the potato off the heat, drains the water, and chops the potato into chunks, heedless of the heat. She snaps her fingers impatiently at Joe when he doesn't hand over the butter fast enough.
You taught him very well, Joe says, trying to appease her. He makes cinnamon rolls just the same way.
I didn't teach him at all, she snaps. He never wanted to learn, just like his papa.
To his horror, Joe sees that there are tears rolling down her cheeks, even as she wipes them away furiously with her apron.
He would like to say he thinks about what he does next, would like to say he comes up with some notion that he knows how Nikki is to be comforted, so therefore his mother might be comforted by the same things. What happens instead is that he sees her crying, and despite feeling very much like this woman doesn't respect him or the life he has built with her son, he wraps her in his arms, because she's Nikki's mother, and she's crying.
I am so sorry for your loss, he says, and she allows the embrace to go on a moment longer before pulling away, sniffing once, and then going back to her dough. The yeast has bubbled.
Nikki had tried the lasagna on Wednesday already, feeling brave, excited to see Joe again on the weekend. He wouldn't exactly call what he had produced a success. The bechamel had been lumpy, and the spinach sauce was much too liquid. Armed with experience on Saturday, he started fresh. He chopped garlic and onions into fine little squares and blanched the spinach. He caught himself humming under his breath as he wrung it out over the sink, just like his mother used to. He had been sure that being gay and living with it would be enough to make sure he never became like his parents, but it appeared some things were unavoidable. Quinn called while he was sautéing the onion.
"We're going out for beer and snooker," she said. "Want to come?"
"I can't tonight," he said, holding the phone between his cheek and his shoulder as he spread a pinch of sugar over the onions.
"Come on," she cajoled. "What could you possibly have planned that's more fun than me and Andy?"
Nikki allowed himself a moment to fantasize what he hoped the evening would end with.
"You're seeing him again, aren't you?"
"Fuck."
"Maybe."
Quinn sighed, exasperated. "Didn't you just go out yesterday?"
"I really like him, Quinn."
"You really like him," she aped. "What if he hurts you?"
"Thankfully, I'm from Liguria, not from Murano," Nikki told her.
"I don't even know what that's supposed to mean. I'm just saying you're diving headfirst into this thing with Joe, when you're basically fresh off the boat. I want to stay friends with you both, and I don't want this ending in tears."
"I may be fresh off the boat," Nikki said, frowning at his onions. They were supposed to be golden brown. It was taking forever. "But I know what I want. Don't worry about me."
"Oh, sure," she said skeptically. "The Catholic priest says he'll be just fine with gay sex."
"Ex-almost priest. And I want to do things to that man that would get me excommunicated by the Pope personally."
He heard Andy laugh in the background.
"Damn, Nikki," she said from somewhere far away.
"Don't support this," Quinn hissed.
"Don't be such a worrywart then," Andy said easily. "I like you and Joe, Nikki."
"Ugh," Quinn fumed.
"Don't come crying to me when this blows up in your face." She hung up.
Nikki shook his head. Unreasonably dramatic. It was just a date. Their third, granted, and he would very much like to see more of Joe. But he was an adult, and he would survive not continuing to date Joe, if the lasagna didn't go well. Deciding that the onions must have had enough by now, he added the garlic and spinach, seasoning it liberally with salt. It had been too bland on Wednesday.
"Fuck," he said, realizing he had forgotten to add tomato paste in with the onions. He added it to the spinach quickly. It wouldn't get quite as toasted, but close enough. The last time he'd used broth to get the bits of aroma off the bottom of the pan, but he had a suspicion that therein lay the cause of the overwhelming sogginess of the lasagna on Wednesday. Instead, he just used the crushed canned tomatoes. He tossed in dried oregano, thyme, and rosemary liberally. "Someday," he thought, "when I'm an adult, I'll grow my own herbs." With the sauce taken care of, he turned to the hard part. A stick of butter seemed about the right amount. He had run low on bechamel last time, and it had made the corners on top too crunchy. The butter was quick to melt, and he poured on flour until the whole mess was congealed.
Whisking constantly, he poured a liter of milk on top. It seemed excessive. It seemed like the flour would never become one with the milk. Once it had, Nicky had severe doubts it would thicken properly. He felt like he'd been waiting for years, his arm beginning to go sore from whisking. He'd felt the same way last time and left it unattended. He wouldn't make the same mistake twice. He reached for the nutmeg blindly, still stirring with his right hand, and nearly pulled the whole pot off the stove. Swearing, he righted the pot and poured nutmeg, salt, and pepper in awkwardly with his left hand. Finally it thickened, going from watery to mashed potato in moments. He pushed it off the stove just in time. Layering the lasagna was quick work, although he added an extra layer of shredded mozzarella above the tomato sauce just to soak up extra moisture and to taste better. He had plenty of bechamel for the top. Too much, really. He shoved the whole thing in the oven and set a timer. Joe rang the buzzer 10 minutes later. "You're early," Nicky said, opening the door. Last time, Joe had hugged him. This time he stepped into Nicky's space, wrapped his arms around Nicky, and pressed a dry kiss to his lips. "I was impatient," Joe admitted. Nicky couldn't have stopped himself smiling if he tried. "It's good to see you," he said. "You saw me less than 16 hours ago." "Still." Joe's eyes were so bright, his smile so poorly hidden, that Nicky couldn't help but kiss him again. He was vaguely aware that Joe's back had thumped into the door, but he didn't quite grasp it until Joe's legs gave around his thigh and his own leg was pressed suddenly tight between Joe's. Joe pulled away to gasp for air, head hitting the door as he tilted it back, allowing Nicky to revisit the scene of last night's crimes, his lips still sensitive from Joe's stubble and dying to be resensitized. "Fuck," Joe said intelligently, his hips squirming. "Fuck, Nicky." It sounded like a marvelous idea. The oven timer went off. Nicky pulled away reluctantly and realized Joe hadn't even taken his jacket off. "Sorry," he said, flushing. "I didn't mean to..." "Jump me?" Joe offered helpfully. Nicky hadn't moved far enough away to not feel the subtle flex of Joe's hips as he tried to accommodate an interest. Nicky was far more interested in exploring than he was in going back to the kitchen to crumble feta on top of the lasagna. "No, I meant to do that," he said. "I didn't mean to be so impolite. Come in, make yourself comfortable." Trying to breathe deeply through his nose and calm down, he headed back to the kitchen and took care of the feta. "It smells delicious again," Joe said. "What have you made me?" "Lasagna," Nicky said. "Not al forno." "Delicioso," Joe laughed. "You speak Italian?" "I get by," Joe said in Italian. "Why do I feel that means you're fluent?" Joe shrugged, leaning against the counter, his eyes twinkling. "I am a man of many talents," he said, still in Italian. Nicky had thought he couldn't possibly get any more attractive. The counter was almost as good a place to kiss Joe up against as the front door. Joe's lips were soft against his mouth lush and wet, and the heat in the kitchen from the oven was enough that Nicky's head was already swimming, before their bodies aligned just right, for him to feel a line of fire from knee to chest. His hand had settled at Joe's hip without his conscious input, the other holding Joe's back steady, keeping him close. It shocked a moan out of him when Joe's hand skirted the line of skin around his waist. "Too much?" Joe panted against his lips. "Not enough," Nicky answered, setting his mouth to the bit of Joe's collarbone peeking out of his shirt. By the time the oven timer went off again, Joe had rucked Nicky's t-shirt almost up to his armpits, and Nicky had pulled Joe's Henley so far down he'd probably ruin the neckline. He couldn't say he was sad about it. Eyes fixed on the love bite he had sucked into Joe's shoulder as they sat opposite each other and tried to focus on dinner. "This is delicious," Joe said, gesturing to his dinner with his fork. "I'm afraid I'm not doing it enough justice because you are also delicious, but you should know I am deeply enamored with your skills in the kitchen." Nicky didn't quite answer, too fixated on "you are delicious," repeating in his brain over and over. They shared the same dessert as they had last time, except they were both lying down on the couch crammed into the corner of the small apartment this time. Nikki blanketed over Joe, kissing his lips and his neck and his shoulders and his chest. He would say he was blind with desire if the sight of Joe's body were not quite so attractive.
"Nikki," Joe gasped, head thrown back. Nikki, that feels so... Nikki, I need you to stop."
Nikki pulled away instantly. "I'm sorry," he said. "Am I too much? I just..."
"No," Joe laughed. "No, Niccolo, you're not too much. You're just right. And I think I will get carried away if I let you keep going."
"What if I want you to get carried away?" Nikki asked, picking up Joe's hand in his, thumb rubbing over his knuckles. He kissed Joe again, soft and then increasingly hard. Joe's eyes were wild when he pulled away.
"I want to make you come," he said.
Joe bit at his upper lip.
"Let me catch my breath," he pleaded. "Nikki, you are something else."
They breathed together for a long moment before Joe spoke again. "You said you were sheltered," he said. "I don't want to rush."
"Sheltered does not mean virginal," Nikki said, feeling as if he'd spent all day convincing people he was indeed old enough to date who he wanted to date.
"I'm not going to run scared. I'm not delicate."
"I might be," Joe said.
Nikki dropped the thread of his rant, losing it entirely to shock.
"You make me feel..." Joe said. "Fuck, this is coming out all wrong."
"You make me feel a lot, Nikki.
And if you want someone to play at becoming less sheltered with, I may be the wrong person, because I want a lot more from you."
Nikki waited too long in replying, long enough that Joe tried to pull his hand away.
"Just," Nikki said, "give me a moment to find the words I want to say."
Reluctantly, Joe nodded and let Nikki keep holding his hand. All at once, and at the same time not at all, Nikki understood what Wynne had been telling him on the phone, that to take this monumental risk with another person was to become vulnerable, that Joe was brave enough to be so vulnerable for Nikki, and that Nikki could hurt him so badly, even now, if that was what he chose.
"I think," Nikki said at last, when he had digested the awful thought that it was entirely in his hands whether or not Joe would be hurt,
"that you mean by less sheltered that I might be looking for sex."
Joe shrugged, then shook his head.
"I don't really know what you're looking for," he said.
"I've had sex," Nikki said. "I had nothing but sex in Italy."
It was perhaps a slight exaggeration of his level of experience. He'd fumbled in the dark with several other confused boys as a teen. Still, sex was sex.
"I didn't like the secrecy and the lack of intimacy. That's not what I want. I do want to have sex with you, a lot, if I'm honest. But what I want more than anything to have someone to be close to."
To love, he meant. But even with Joe so candid before him, he didn't dare say it yet. Joe must have known, though, because he reached out to cup Nikki's cheek with his free hand.
"I would love to be close to you, Niccolo," he said. "Perhaps we could agree to be gentle with each other?"
"I would like that," Nikki said. He woke the next morning wrapped in Joe's arms, warm and comfortable, with the whole apartment stinking of garlic and cheese left out overnight. It wasn't quite what he'd envisioned. It was better. To be continued.
Chrysalis, Chapter 6. Coco. Andy calls on Sunday morning while Joe is fighting with his tie. They went to bed early, left the oppressive silence in the living room early, that is, with only Niccolino babbling away, oblivious to the sorrow and anger clouding the atmosphere. Nikki hadn't wanted to talk. He had brushed his teeth and laid down on the bed facing away from Joe, but he had turned halfway around when Joe laid down next to him, carefully apart.
"Please hold me," Nikki had said.
Joe had obeyed with alacrity.
He had whispered into Nikki's hair everything he had been dying to say all day. That he loved Nikki. That he was there for him. That he was so sorry Nikki had to feel this. Nikki hadn't answered, but he had burrowed deeper into Joe's hold and fallen asleep almost instantly. Joe had lain awake for a long time afterwards, listening to him breathe. They had awoken only an hour before the church service was due to begin. Nikki was still in the shower when Andy called. "You're not at home," she accuses. "No, we're not," he says, trying to jam the speakerphone button with his cheek. He ends up disconnecting and having to call her back. "Sorry, I'm in the middle of getting dressed." "Where are you?" "Italy." "What are you doing there?" Andy asks, as if the whole country of Italy were too polluted to be inhabited by humans. In fairness, until yesterday, Nikki and Joe treated it as if it was. "Nikki's dad died." "Oh, shit," Andy says. "Fuck, I was going to complain about your neighbor. Now I feel like a dick." "What did Booker do?" "He was in your apartment." "He's feeding the cat." Joe runs a hand through his hair, then curses himself out mentally for ruining it. "Oh, well, it's not like Nikki's family can like him less." "Wait, what are you doing in our apartment?" "I thought I'd visit." Joe can practically hear her shrug down the phone line. He closes his eyes and prays for patience. "People sometimes call ahead." "I'm not people," Andy says. "Go easy on Booker. He's having a hard time of it." "I'll say," Andy snickers. Joe groans inwardly. "What did you do to him?" Andy says nothing, but Joe knows when he's being smirked at. "Tell me you didn't steal his new girlfriend." "That's not exactly what happened," Andy hedges. Joe sighs. "You know what? I don't even want to know. Don't break anything and don't kill the cat. We'll be back sometime tomorrow, probably." "Is Nikki okay?" Andy rarely allows for real human emotion to cloud her voice, but when she does, it's terribly affecting. "No," Joe says, sitting down on the bed and ruining the clean lines of his suit. "He's not. It's terrible. Everything is awful." "Is there anything you need?" "Bless Andy. It's almost as if she's trying." "You could talk to Nikki. Remind him you're there for him." "Oh, you're the worst couple I know," Andy shudders. "I'll call him." "You were worse once," Joe wants to tell her. "Remember what you were like before you and Quinn destroyed each other?" He doesn't say it. For long moments after he's hung up, Joe sits and breathes deeply. He stands when Nikki comes back from the shower. "Mama said she wanted to give me something before church," Nikki says, as if it were just another Sunday. "Are you..." Joe starts. "I can't, Joe," Nikki says. "Not right now." "All right," Joe says. "Let me help you with your tie?" "Because you did such a good job with yours?" Joe looks down and realizes he never finished tying it. It is worth it for the shadow of a smile on Nikki's face. Of course, then everything goes to shit. Nikki's mother hands him a folded letter on her way out the door, and Nikki reads it. Joe loiters in front of the house, waiting for Nikki to be ready. He can see the church from here. It can't be more than 5 minutes away, but he's still nervous about being late. It feels like everything here is against them anyway. When Nikki finally leaves the house, Joe forgets all about that. "I can't go," Nikki says. "What?" I can't go to this. Let's just leave. Let's just go home." "Nikki." "Joe," Nikki says, and when he finally looks at Joe properly, Joe can see that he's crying. Joe's never seen Nikki cry, not in 8 years together. He's seen him tear up a little the last time Joe proposed, but he's never seen his eyes go red, never seen tear tracks down his cheek, never seen this. Joe cries at the end of every movie. Nikki never does. "Nikki," he says again, and pulls his husband into his arms. Nicky is stiff as a board, but he allows himself to be held, refuses to let Joe go. He shakes in Joe's arms.
"What is it, my love?" Joe asks him. "What happened?"
"Read it," Nicky says, pressing the letter he'd just received into Joe's chest. He turns around, arms crossed, drying his eyes with his palms. Joe skims the letter. It's in spidery cursive and much too long to read properly when Nicky needs him this much. What he reads of it, it's hard. He catches phrases. Disappointment. Still love you. Wish you would come back and forget this business. The gist is unmistakable. It's dated the day before Nicky's father died. Joe's throat tightens up. His anger has never been his friend. It claws up his stomach, burns hot and insistent. This is the one time he must absolutely not let it get the best of him. "He's wrong," Joe says, and even to himself, his voice sounds wrong. "He's wrong, my darling. You know he is. I know he is. It is sad he could not live long enough to learn how wrong he is. It is sad he could not see you for what a wonderful person you are." Nicky makes a noise, an awful, drowned sob. "Niccolo," Joe says again, wishing he could stop just saying Nicky's name over and over. He wraps Nicky up again, holding him fast from behind in his arms as he does every night in their sleep. He lets Nicky sob, harsh and loud, and so unlike him, for as long as either of them can stand it.
"I can't do it, tesoro," Nicky says. "I can't go into that church and mourn for him. Not when he still hated everything I am."
Joe rests his head on Nicky's shoulder. "If it's really what you want, we'll leave now," he says. Just be sure you won't regret it later, if you weren't the bigger person." He wishes, for Nicky's sake, that Nicky were petty enough to leave with him now. Alas, he knew when he said it that Nicky wasn't. They make it to the church before the service starts. By the time Joe invited Nicky to come back to his flat, they had been dating for 3 weeks. After the lasagna, there had been an afternoon in which Joe tried to rectify Nicky's lacking tourist experience in London, saying he had lived there for 4 months and hadn't seen the sights yet. This apparently meant standing in line for an hour to see the Sherlock Holmes Museum, which had really only been entertaining due to Joe's nonstop commentary about what a shoddy exhibition it was. It was December by then, and it was bitingly, bracingly cold, but they took a long walk down the Christmas markets by the Thames to see something worthwhile afterwards. "I love all this," Joe said, gesturing to the stalls full of alternating artisanal products and straight-up junk. "You don't celebrate Christmas, though, do you?" Nicky asked. Joe shrugged. "Not in any religious way, but it's a vacation, whether I want to or not. I might as well enjoy it. Besides, look at all the festivity." Nicky wasn't entirely sure what he was supposed to be seeing, besides the pink of Joe's cheeks in the cold and how warmly he was bundled into his winter coat and scarf. They had gone out for drinks with Andy and Quinn a few days later, which made Nicky more nervous than it had any right to. "You don't need to worry so much," Joe had told him, lounging on Nicky's bed, flicking through one of his textbooks like he belonged there. He did. He had spent 3 of the last 4 nights sleeping there, curled around Nicky like a comma around a clause. "You've already seen them nearly get arrested for public indecency." "We weren't..." Nicky trailed off, gesturing vaguely between the two of them. "They're your friends. They should think I'm good enough for you." Joe laughed loosely, stretching. Nicky was instantly lost to the span of his stomach, revealed where his shirt was riding up. He definitely wasn't good enough for Joe. "I think Quinn will flay me alive if I make an attempt on your honor," he said pensively. "Please do," Nicky said, his brain still entirely focused on Joe's skin. Joe's laughter was warm. "All in due time, Habibi," he said, and rolled out of bed to press a kiss to Nicky's cheek. "Let's go. If we're late, they'll string me up for ravishing you." Nikki spent the evening pressed up against Joe in the too narrow booth of the bar, sipping at a single pint of beer while Joe drank a hot cocoa, allowing Andy to tease them about their as-yet non-existent sex life, and Quinn to inquire slightly too probingly about their dates. "It's not fair," she complained. "I've known Nikki for much longer, and he's never cooked me delicious Italian food." Joe shrugged. "You must be less worthy than me," he teased. "Fuck that. If you only cook for people to get them to fuck you, I'll be happy to wear a strap-on for some homemade pizza. I have some lovely models." "Please don't," Nikki protested, blushing despite having gotten used to her irreverence over 4 months of acquaintance. "I'm happy to cook for all of us." "Ah, Nikki, you shouldn't have said that," Andy said. "Why?" "Because now you'll have to cook for us all the time," Joe said. At the same time as Andy said, "I love to see her in a strap-on." It was almost worth realizing that he'd need to learn to cook pizza, too, to feel Joe shaking with laughter against him. It was probably worth learning to cook pizza to have Joe follow him home again and kiss him softly, gently, and with increasing passion, until they were hard and panting into each other's open mouths, desperate to go one step further, but not quite willing to break their vow of gentleness yet. It was absolutely worth learning to cook pizza when Joe said, after they'd turned off the lights and gone to bed, "I wanted to call you my boyfriend tonight." "Did you?" Nikki asked, heart pounding, turning over to face Joe. I wanted to tell Quinn to stop teasing my boyfriend." Nikki swallowed. "I like the idea of being yours." "But not my boyfriend?" "It's a stupid English word." Joe chuckled. "I think English would take offense if I just called you mine." Nikki had finally calmed his hormones down enough to sleep, but hearing Joe talk like that, it didn't help. "I like it," he said. "So do I," Joe admitted. "Il mio ragazzo." Nikki tested the words on his tongue and found them lacking as well. "Il mio fidanzato." "Yes," Joe said hoarsely. "Call me that more." Nikki rested his head against Joe's, trying to catch his breath from the conversation. "If I do, we'll never go to sleep." "Maybe," Joe said. "Maybe tomorrow you could come home with me instead?" It seemed like a non sequitur, like nothing to do with their conversation, but Nikki knew Joe well enough by now to know he meant something by it. He knew himself well enough to know there was nearly nothing he would refuse Joe. To be continued. Chrysalis, Chapter 7, Risotto. There is a man sitting next to Elena that Joe hasn't yet met. He asks Nikki in an undertone if he knows the man before the service, but Nikki just scoffs. Nicolino is sitting next to him and clinging to his arm, so Joe assumes he must be the boy's father. Whether he is estranged from Elena, or divorced, or never even married to her in the first place, remains a mystery to Joe. It seems to calm Nikki somewhat to glare at the back of his head. Joe is uncomfortably aware of the letter folded in the inside pocket of his suit jacket. He couldn't throw it away. Nikki might want it back. He wants to burn it. The service is very Italian and very, very Catholic. So much of it is in Latin that Joe tunes out, people watching instead. The church is full, which doesn't surprise him. Everyone in town has to turn out to this sort of thing. There's a group of bored teenagers toward the front, jostling each other with their shoulders, poorly hiding their phones in their sleeves when their parents look over. The unfamiliar man has his hands full with Nicolino, who tries more than once to make a break for the altar. Joe catches the word flowers several times and surmises that Nicolino is jealous of a dead man's bouquets and would like some for himself. They are very nice bouquets. Elena only looks over, in exasperation every once in a while, too busy watching her mother with an eagle eye, who is sitting ramrod straight and immobile throughout the service. It isn't enough for Joe to figure out if she and this mystery man are estranged from each other or not. They play Bach at the very end of the service. It is cliché,
a piece Joe intimately associates with sorrow already, even if he can't name the tune. Still, it draws tears into his eyes unpleasantly. He can't cry here. This isn't his to cry over, and he curses his own persistent Pavlovian response to sad music. On the pew out of sight, he reaches for Nikki's hand. Nikki grasps it so tight in return that Joe's knuckles turn white. Nikki is not crying either, but perhaps it is a closer thing than usual. Leaving the church after the service ends is more difficult than anticipated. There is a door, but Lucia stands in it and receives condolence after condolence, handkerchief after handkerchief. Elena beside her receives nearly as many. The unfamiliar man Nikki disapproves of went outside with Nicolino after the first 10. Nikki receives nothing but openly curious looks. Vultures. It is a blessing when Joe's phone buzzes in his pocket. He turns to pull it out. Fuck impoliteness. He feels like a zoo animal at this point. "It's Miriam," he says to Nikki, holding out the phone. "She texted that she wanted to talk to you." Nikki takes the phone with a grateful look and disappears out the side door. "Miriam?" Elena asks in an undertone. "My sister," Joe says. He takes a slight pleasure in how uncomfortable she clearly is at the thought of his sister being in touch with not only Joe, but Nikki as well. He follows Nikki out the door. It's a crisp, clear, lovely day. A shame, really. "Hey," someone says, and Joe turns around to see the man who must be Nicolino's father. "Hey, Yusuf, right?" "Yeah." "You might want to see this." He holds out his phone. Through a spiderweb crack on the upper right-hand corner, Joe sees a picture of two men in suits, one behind the other. Only the backs of their heads are visible. The one in front just slightly turned, so the profile of his nose is a bare shadow on the picture. The man behind has his arms wrapped around the middle of the man in front. The caption is a single red heart. It's a lovely picture. However, Joe is at a loss to explain why a user named MadMateo04 would have posted a picture of him and Nikki from this morning on his Instagram account. He scrolls down and finds another of the two of them arriving at the train station yesterday. Nikki pulling the suitcase and Joe with his hands in his pockets, both clearly uncomfortable, with the caption, "OMG, they're here." "Here, let me show you," the man whose phone Joe is holding says. He takes his phone back, scrolls through for a few moments, and then turns it around again. Joe instantly recognizes the evening the photo was taken. It was their 7th anniversary, and they had sprung for a fancy dinner by the water. Nikki had ordered a steak, and the sounds he made as he ate it nearly made Joe duck under the tablecloth, because only Joe was supposed to get those sounds. He presumed it was fair. Nikki cooked vegetarian for the two of them, and only ate meat when they went out. But the sounds! Joe had eaten ravioli. It had been a lovely night. On the picture, they're holding hands across the table. The caption under the photo reads, "That feeling when the guy from your village, who was going to be a priest and then vanished without a trace, turns out to be living his best life with the man of all our dreams. Hashtag LGBTQ+. Hashtag why are all the good ones taken?" It has over 1,000 likes and hundreds of comments. "Fuck," Joe says with feeling. Sorry, Nicolino. The man's face splits into a wide grin. "Nicolino, that's adorable. Why didn't I consider that?" Joe is just about to ask his name when Nikki reappears from behind the church. "Enzo," he greets the man coolly. "Nicolo," Enzo returns, far more friendly than Joe would be in his stead. Joe wonders what happened between them to cause such an imbalance. "What did Miriam have to say?" he asks Nikki instead. Nikki shrugs. "The usual. Your mother is making baklava again." Joe grimaces. Every few years, his mother decides to make her own baklava, phyllo dough and all. It takes days, and she invariably makes so much that no one can eat it all. And then she sends a package of it to Joe and Nikki by mail,
which always arrives crumbled and essentially inedible. The last two times, Nicky has been so irked by the entire experience, he ended up making his own baklava from scratch. And then Joe is stuck reassuring both his husband and his mother, out of earshot of the other, that they make the best baklava in the world, and he would prefer no other baklava. Joe doesn't even like baklava. Nicky's lips twitch at the expression on Joe's face, a ghost of a smile. It feels like it's been days since Nicky smiled properly. We should visit them again, Nicky says. We haven't seen them since the wedding. Anytime you like, Joe says. Visiting his family is stressful and usually makes him restless and antsy after 2 or 3 days, dying to get out of the house. But he loves them all. And what's more, Nicky loves them, and they love Nicky. Enzo clears his throat. Nicky gives him a look that would kill a weaker or maybe just a less oblivious man. We should head over to the wake, Nicky says, and turns on his heel. So far, Joe has liked none of these people, especially by virtue of the fact that they hurt Nicky. But Enzo must have done something truly unforgivable. It's a shame because Nicolino seems to adore him. Sighing, Joe waves goodbye to father and son and turns to follow Nicky. Joe's flat was a marvel. Why have we not been here before? Nicky asked reverently. It was so light and spacious. There was a convenient half wall blocking Joe's bed from the living space. Why would you ever spend time in my apartment when you could always be here? How do you even afford this place? Joe laughed. In reverse order, he said, holding up 3 fingers and counting down as he went. I rent it from a professor who charges under market value. If I were always here, I would go insane. And we have not been here before because I was using you for your marvelous cooking. Joe, Nicky said, looking at him very seriously, I would cook in your kitchen any day. I would become your kitchen slave if you would let me enjoy the view from your windows and the much, much shorter train ride to class. Careful now, Joe said, voice slipping into the register Nicky had privately named the Drive Nicky Insane register. You'll give me ideas. I want you to have ideas about me, naked, in your kitchen, Nicky said. Fuck. Joe dragged him in by the lapels of his jacket and kissed him soundly until Nicky nearly forgot he was still carrying groceries and tried to reach for Joe. Okay, okay, Joe said, pulling back. Dinner. We can handle making dinner. Nicky had severe doubts, but he was willing to try. In Joe's defense, they made it through most of the cooking process. But then for most of it, they weren't looking directly at each other. Joe chopped the garlic while Nicky took care of the mushrooms. Nicky fried the mushrooms while Joe got the rice ready. Joe stirred the rice broth and cream while Nicky grated Parmesan. It was only when they moved the pot off the heat and Nicky poured the Parmesan on top, ready to serve it at last, that they collided again. You missed something, Joe said. Huh? Nicky asked distractedly, trying not to burn himself on the pot. Joe lifted Nicky's hand to his mouth and licked a stray bit of cheese off of the side. Nicky said a number of things he had been forced to wash his mouth out with soap for saying as a child. Joe, he said raggedly when Joe pulled away. What are you doing to me? Am I teasing you, sweetheart? Joe asked with half a smile that only served to make Nicky feel more insane. Are you teasing me? He asked and pivoted sharply to press Joe up against the counter. I don't know. Is it a tease? He hissed out against the soft skin of Joe's neck. To make me want you so much I can think of nothing else? Joe made a considering noise. Nicky pulled at his shirt so hard the seams ripped. Is it a tease to wake up next to you so hard I can't breathe and do nothing about it? Joe groaned as Nicky bit at his nipple. It's only a tease if I don't follow through eventually, Joe said breathlessly, and Nicky fell to his knees in front of him. He rested his head heavily on Joe's hip. If you want to wait longer, Nicky said, I will be fine with that. If you're ready now, please let me suck your cock. Fuck, how were you almost a priest? Joe groaned, knuckles white on the countertops.
I was very bad at it, Nikki said, and unzipped Joe's jeans with his teeth. Joe's boxer briefs were pinstriped, and the soft swell of his half-hard dick was frankly mouth-watering. Nikki rubbed his face against it, catching the scent he had only known in hints before, in the traces of sweat Joe left on his sheets before he showered in the morning, in his clothes after a long day. It was so animal, so alive, so real, that Nikki felt the inevitable collide of his fantasies into reality like a gut punch. "Please," Joe said. Nikki had his pants and boxer briefs around his ankles in seconds, kneeling up to get his mouth around the head. The kitchen tiles were too hard, the lines between them burning against his knees. It was the only thing that kept Nikki from floating away entirely when he tasted Joe's pulse on his tongue. He looked around the head of Joe's cock, then down the vein on the underside, pressing sloppy wet kisses on the sides and letting saliva run down the shaft to ease the way, and then he returned to the tip and swallowed the whole thing down. The noise Joe made above him made Nikki throb. "Nikki, Niccolo," Joe panted, "what are you doing to me? Did I dream you? Are you really real? How can you be so good for me?" Nikki whimpered, Joe's cock still trapped in his throat. He pulled back slowly, breathed in, and pushed himself forward again. His throat clicked, and the sound made him greedier. Joe's hand carted through his hair. "Sorry, sorry," Joe hissed, pulling his hand away. But Nikki grabbed for his hand blindly and put it back in his hair. Joe grabbed at it firmly, and Nikki whined around him. "You want me to fuck your mouth?" Joe asked, voice as sweet as his words were filthy. Nikki pulled off just far enough to nod, and then Joe used his grip to pull Nikki back down on his cock. Time went liquid then, as Joe pulled his hair and fucked his dick through Nikki's lips and against the back of his throat again and again. "So good for me," Joe groaned, and Nikki squirmed. "You're making me feel so good," Joe told him, and Nikki had to press his palm against his erection. "Fuck, Nikki, you're so beautiful. You're the best thing I've ever seen. I can't believe you'd let me do this to you," Joe rambled, and Nikki redoubled his efforts, tongue drawing clumsy patterns against the underside of Joe's cock as he swallowed around it again and again. "You're going to make me come," Joe said. "I'm so close. Let me..." Nikki grabbed at Joe's hips when he tried to pull out, keeping him firmly in his mouth as he licked and laved at every part of Joe's cock he could reach, until it pulsed, warm and bitter, into his mouth. Above him, Joe was quiet, but when Nikki craned his neck to look up while keeping his mouth firmly around the still spurting head of his dick, Joe was looking down at him with his eyes wide and his mouth open, gasping. "Nikki," he said when Nikki finally pulled off. "Nikki, come here." "Don't make me stand up," Nikki pleaded. He was dizzy just kneeling there. Joe slid down the counter to sit beside him, to grab the lapels of the jacket he was still strangely wearing, and kiss his swollen, tender lips. "You taste like me," Joe mumbled. "How is that so hot?" Nikki buried his face in Joe's shoulder. He had been ready, more than ready, to have sex with Joe, but the reality of how much he felt, now that it was happening, was overwhelming. He wanted to secrete away part of his brain, to protect himself, to keep himself apart from what was happening. But it was as if his consciousness had gone offline, and all he had left was raw nerves. "Are you all right?" Joe asked. "That was intense." "It was perfect," Nikki said, muffled into Joe's shirt. "It made me so hard." He dragged Joe's hand to rest against his erection, unmistakable through the fly of the tan pants he wanted to rip off of his skin. "Can I make you feel good?" Joe asked. "You already have," Nikki said helplessly. "So good." "I can make it better," Joe said, and his fingers were clumsy. But in seconds, he had undone Nikki's fly and reached into his boxer shorts to run his knuckles gently down the sensitive skin of his dick. The sound Nikki made was not one he had ever heard from his own throat before. "Let me take care of you," Joe said, laying Nikki gently back against the tiles of the floor. "Let me make you come." It wouldn't take much, Nikki wanted to tell him. But then Joe was already bending down to mouth at the tip of his cock, and all ability for rational speech left him. Joe's fist was tight around the base, stroking in quick little movements, as his tongue laved circles around the head over and over until Nikki groaned, hips straining upward.
"More?" Joe asked. "Or less?"
"More," Nikki begged. "More, please, more."
Joe's lips wrapped tight around the head of his cock, sucking gently but firmly, and his hand kept pace around the rest of it, and Nikki was coming and coming and coming, sweetness clenching through his abdomen, his thighs, his balls, until he felt tears leak out his eyes.
"Fuck," he groaned, head lolling back against the kitchen floor to stare at the ceiling. Joe laughed. There was a rustle of cloth, and then Joe was lying beside him.
"Wow," he said.
Nikki looked over at him.
"Did you enjoy that?"
"I don't think my legs work anymore."
"I'll take that as a yes," Nikki said.
"I thought I would be more suave about it."
"If you had been any more seductive, I might be dead now," Joe said seriously. "It would have been a very embarrassing headstone. I will thank you to not try and outdo yourself."
Nikki laughed, leaning in until their heads were touching, nestled together on the kitchen floor.
"You liked it when I told you how good you were," Joe observed.
Nikki's entire body flushed.
"It's all right," Joe said. "I liked it too, a lot."
"I like other things too," Nikki said weakly. "I think. It's been a while."
"We'll figure it out."
Nikki stretched out his fingers, reaching for Joe. With their hands tangled together, they caught their breath for a while longer.
"I think maybe we should take a shower," Joe said. "You haven't even seen the bathroom yet. It's lovely."
Nikki groaned. When he finally got to his feet, his knees were red and aching from the floor. Joe hissed.
"You'll have to let me take care of that," he said. "Maybe a bath instead of a shower."
By the time they finally got to the risotto, it was cold and congealed. They ate it straight from the pot, feeding each other spoonfuls, entirely unable to stop smiling at each other. It was delicious. To be continued.